Welcome back to the Who Cares podcast, episode 3, and today we'll be talking about dementia specifically, because we'll probably do more than one episode on dementia, whether a home care setting or a care home setting is most suitable for dementia, and we'll go straight into it today without any delay. So I think first of all we need to kind of talk about what dementia is, because it's not just your stereotypical image of somebody with dementia, completely addled, unable to find anything, unable to remember anything or even who they are, and you know, what is dementia? Where does it start? Where does it end? Because I understand it, it's an umbrella of a number of things.
Well, yes, to an extent, it's some form of cognitive decline, and it can be categorised or diagnosed, should we say, in different forms. So you have dementia, or you have Alzheimer's, you have different branches to each dementia. So you might have Lewy bodies, Korsakoff-associated dementia, etc., etc. There's many different types. Vascular, very common. Different types of dementia or Alzheimer's, but 9 times out of 10, they present the same in the individual. How they sort of come about varies depending on the specifics of the diagnosis of dementia. So vascular dementia, for example, is sort of, side effect is the wrong term, but it's an associated effect with poor cardiovascular health.
Yeah. So restricted blood flow to the brain.
Basically, prevents cells from replicating in the right way, and then hence where we, you know, cognition is lost. But either way, it sort of has the same effect, which when I say same effect means it can be any effect at all at any given time on any person. So any emotion or emotion or motion that a person experiences or goes through in any part of their life is what can be experienced by a person with dementia or Alzheimer's at any time within their diagnosis, prognosis or experience of that illness. So it's unpredictable 9 times out of 10. It's very variable, and it often doesn't stick with traits of the person. So you might know your parents very, very well. They get a diagnosis of dementia, and then all of a sudden you literally feel like you've never met this person before. Personalities can change, behaviours, preferences, likes, dislikes, everything.
Languages.
And anything, yeah, literally, it can be just totally different. I mean, it can be the same as well. You know, you can just get different variations of the same personality, but I think the hardest thing with dementia is you really do not know whether you're coming or going. Be that you're the person who's experiencing dementia, or you're the people associated somewhere else in that person's life. It's a can of worms.
Mm. And it increases in specific types of behaviour, such as violent behaviour, abusive behaviour.
Well, you can, yeah. In my experience, I think that's due to the feeling of vulnerability. So if you imagine yourself, if you feel threatened, you respond differently than how you would if you felt welcomed, wouldn't you, in any given situation? People experiencing dementia or Alzheimer's often feel vulnerable because part of their brain knows that they don't know something, but it doesn't know what it doesn't know. So instantly it's on the back foot of, hang on, what's going on here? It doesn't feel settled. The person's aware something's wrong, but not forward enough in that awareness that they can say, my hands are up here. I'm in a pickle. Somebody help me. So they go on the defensive. So you do often see aggressive or challenging tendencies. And that's probably not scientific fact, but that's definitely conclusive in my personal experience.
Unless it's George Bush Senior gropey, who's a bit gropey and uses it as a bit of a crutch.
Yeah, I mean, everything can be used, can't it, as a crutch in the certain situations that are taken advantage of. But it's more like a rabbit in headlights sort of fear response in dementia. Also, like, misunderstanding, why is this person coming into my house? Why are they trying to wash me? What on earth is going on? Things like that are going to feel inappropriate. And again, you just get that initial instinct to protect yourself. So it's more common than not you get those sort of behaviours in response to something else.
I suppose that would lead on to when we get into what setting is best in terms of, well, what setting is safest for everybody, given those behaviours.
Well, That depends on the individual, but again, in my experience, an environment that is well known to the person is usually the safest place to start, at least, if not where to end.
We'll get on to that.
For obvious reasons, but yeah.
But in terms, so you've got, like you say, you've got Alzheimer's, you've got dementia, you've got different branches coming off that.
Yes.
So you've got the Korsakoff, which is mainly alcohol-induced, and you've
yes.
got different, but basically all of them are on the same trajectory in terms of mild symptoms to full-blown, like I said at the beginning, stereotypical dementia. Yeah. None of them stay mild or come and go. It does all progress into...
It all progresses, but depending on what...
And the speeds can vary, obviously.
Yeah, of course, but the... Depending on the specific diagnosis depends on the progression. Vascular dementia, linking back to that, people can manage with that with incredibly mild symptoms for a very, very, very long time. Then you go into the morning after the evening before and this person has fully, completely, utterly fallen off planet Earth because their vascular health has taken a nosedive.
It's generally not going to get better, is it?
No.
Really, as age and
but it can capacity. Literally... we've had that extreme twice in the company I work at's experience where you're talking from one evening to the following morning and the change is just insane. And if I hadn't seen it or experienced it myself, it would be hard to grasp that possibility, but it really can be that severe and that sudden.
And what age range are we looking at in terms of... Because obviously there's always early onset.
Well, people always associate it with old age, and... It is more common in old age because, again, you just simply not got the right progression of the cells in the brain.
Degeneration.
Yeah. So it's bound to be more common in old age, but it's not a given. Just because we all age, all the people that age, doesn't mean they get dementia, because it skips an awful lot of people. And there's a lot of evidence to state that it depends how active you keep your brain. Use it, lose it. That's said for lots of different things, and there's a lot of science to back that up. So in answer to your question, it can start from as early as your 50s, dementia, Alzheimer's, it cannot kick in until you're 103. So it's, if you get to that point, it's highly unlikely it's going to. But it can sort of hit any mid-range. Again, in our experience, we've had very professional people, very high-flying businessmen who... have a really good career, retire early, and then that sudden retirement actually has a very negative effect on their cognitive health, and in comes the diagnosis of early onset dementia, Alzheimer's, and we're looking after these people in community, and they're only in their 50s, diagnosed a handful of years ago with associated dementias. Again, it's the use it or lose it.
You usually find the more independence you take off somebody, the less able they become at a quicker rate.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so I've got dealing with dementia, but also where to get support, and I've put a few things in the wrong order. So I think if you're a family member who started to become concerned, likelihood if there's a reason for concern, but if there's a reason for concern, likely your mum, your dad, your grandparent, whoever, will have probably already noticed something themselves that they're not necessarily wanting to admit to, but... What kind of signs would you be seeing, or what kind of signs would you be noticing, looking out for?
Repetition in anything. So that's in a certain behaviour or within forgetfulness. So you might have somebody who goes to the shop every day of the week because they've always gone to get the newspaper. But what they start coming back with is the newspaper and 5 bananas. And they get 5 bananas the next day and the next day and the next day. Whereas previously they would have been able to understand they've got enough bananas to last, you know, 3, 4, 5 days. Things like that can happen. Forgetting, sort of, it's normally associated with short-term memory, so it would be forgetting things that have recently happened or names of grandchildren, things like that. But there also needs to be lorry loads of salt here, because if somebody's got, like, 14 grandchildren and then there's 3 or 4 great-grandchildren, it's genuinely very hard to keep up with.
I can barely remember what we did, what happened last week or the week before.
Yeah, so no, exactly. So, it can be hard to pinpoint, and it's very easy to panic because, again, it's an easy, quick association. But it's not always like that. So the answer is it's tricky and you have to be really, really patient, because bar, obviously, the one scenario about the dropping off the cliff with vascular dementia, and that particular client, you can't really tell overnight. You have to look at something over a fairly long period of time, a good handful of weeks. Even if someone gets referred to a memory clinic for a formal diagnosis, they assess them over 6 months. And the actual definition for diagnosis for dementia is there has to be an assessment completed over at least 6 months. There has to be a pattern of the same behaviours, the same digressions in cognitive function for at least 6 months for it to even be considered a formal diagnosis. So
in short, don't panic straight away.
No. Patience.
Patience. Get help. Know you're going to have this at least 6 month period where there's going to be, unless it's been left for so long and you haven't seen it.
Yeah, and it might be different in different areas of the country, but the template for the diagnosis is a minimum 6 months because other organic factors can affect memory. Simple aging process affects memory anyway. That doesn't mean it's dementia. Naturally, people are going to forget things and not remember things as well as they had. It doesn't
get very confused with water infections.
Any infection, water infection, chest infection, it's terrible, and very straightforwardly and instantly confused, which can obviously make other things worse. Mm-hmm. But it can be tricky, but I think instinct is really good, and people normally know that are close to people that that's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, it's tricky, but...
How would you broach the conversation? How would you suggest somebody broaches that conversation?
Who is?
If let's say you're worried about your relative, they're not going to get help themselves, they're not talking about it. If you're concerned, what would you suggest is the best way to approach that conversation?
Pick time, obviously, like you would with any important conversation, is pick an appropriate time, make sure you've got the person's attention and ask them what they think themselves and highlight what you have noticed. And why you're highlighting it. Basically, you're worried because.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, as such, you would like that person to just have a formal assessment or a little help, just a chat with the GP, something. Medicine has come on leaps and bounds and will continue to. And there's some really, really, really good medications that can be prescribed when, at the beginning of an assumed dementia, Alzheimer's prognosis, and it can sort of stunt the progression of the Alzheimer's dementia very effectively. The irony is those tablets have to be taken at the same time every day and the person can't forget to take them at the same time every day. But so it might trigger other aspects of support, but my point being there's some things that can be done, which, again, science is slowly proving because they're fairly new, really, that these medications can be effective.
Well, that was one of the surprising things a few months ago now when the friend said, mother's early onset dementia, etc., etc. And the question was, well, what medication should be put on? And it's like, well, nothing. They're going to review her for how well they've been waiting weeks and months to put her on any medication.
Mm.
And really, it should have been doing something to try and slow that progression.
Well, they can be. We've worked obviously with countless GPs in over different counties and areas within county, and depending on who you get, some GPs in literally my experience have said, well, we'll start this prescription today and we'll get the person in however many weeks' time. Mm. It just depends on people's approach, and obviously, which it would anybody, a GP's approach everything differently. And it depends what rapid response teams there are in what areas and, dementia, et cetera, et cetera. So, but there are certainly things, as a relative, you can ask for. And if you ask specifically enough for something, any service, whether it be GP or other services, would find it hard to refuse your request. So it's good to know.
On that note, if you are a relative or a partner or somebody, how do you get help for this person if they're not in a position to do it themselves or willing to do it themselves?
GP. GP practically starts every process you need support with. So it will be flagging up to the GP, saying that you think this is what's happening, give a brief description of why you think that's been happening, and explain why you're looking for help now, why you're worried.
And what support would they then do?
Well, they could potentially prescribe something to try and stunt any progressions of that decline. They would either see the person themselves, which presently with COVID or post-COVID, even as it practically is now, that's still non-existent. So a telephone phone call, some sort of assessment, they may directly refer the person to a memory clinic, another cognitive unit, some other support system they've got within that community, to get them looked at specifically for that. What they often fail to do is point out that there's other things that you can do to try and make things easier as you go along, aka what help have you got at home for your mum or for your husband or for whatever? Are you managing? Can they manage with what you've got? It's the same with anything. It's sort of prevention and cure sort of things, and some things can help. They can also help assess whether actually this is an issue or not. So it's thinking outside the box, really, and doing as much as you want to yourself as the person on the outside. Try and make it as better as you think you can, but do so with advice.
Yeah.
Because too much all at once when there's been nothing is equally as detrimental as doing nothing.
One of the things out there for people living for a bit further away from the person they care about and the person that needs the support was the, I can't remember the product name now, but it's the box, where it means you can call through, but it also means you can see and have a video the conversation.
There's a canary system which can basically is a bit like a weird Sims reality and shows you where somebody is, in which room, and which door's been opened at what time, and things like that.
I think there's the other one where it allows for video calling, but it also means like you could also have a one-way transmission so you can check where they are and check that they're okay.
You can actually come through on the telly and things like that nowadays, can't you? There's all sorts of smart technologies which are great, but they mainly benefit the relative, because if you imagine if you have got dementia and also your telly livens up and you're who you think could be your daughter's on the screen asking if you're taking medication. Again, everything's got its limit, and it's when it's appropriate and how it's appropriate. They're great things, but everything needs consideration, would be my advice.
Okay. So when you're putting your support in place, so you've got your support from the GP, and in this scenario, a support package at home is to be put in place. What are the hard and fast rules? What are the things that, as a care provider, you need to consider and do, and anything that's just something that's a must?
Well, obviously, a very thorough and effective assessment, point one, so you actually know what you're facing, and therefore you can determine how to face it best. And within that is determining how you approach it. So are we having to approach this hard and fast? Or are we approaching this slowly, slowly, catch your monkey? Because, again, depending on the person's experience, generally, of receiving care or support or anything, plus how they present, will make a big difference to how they respond to that support, obviously. As it would anybody at any time in their lives needing help. But when there's cognitive decline, it's very hard to measure. It's additionally difficult to measure. So the hard and fast rules, as I say, would be a really, really good assessment. And an agency that you can really speak to is the relative, the partner, the concerned party. So you can explain specifically what you're concerned about. Lots of people with dementia or assumed dementia, because lots of people don't formally get diagnosed these days, is, well, he looks fine. Everyone else thinks I'm the one going potty here, but I know that he's not doing this or he's not doing that, and there's all these other things. So you might know something very, very intricate that needs definite attention to, and everything else may well be fine. So somebody going in to provide a well-being call, making sure someone's had breakfast and making sure they're dressed appropriately, to somebody who's got early onset dementia but can certainly make their own breakfast and can certainly get dressed appropriately, would be hugely inappropriate and would have a very negative effect on that individual. It might be really that there just needs to be one call later in the day to make sure the front door's been locked or something. It all comes down to detail, which mostly it does within care. But when you're dealing with cognitive issues, it is specifically detailed and much less general.
Mm-hmm.
Personal care general, with details, of course, but cognitive is the other way around. It's very, very specific, and it's very person-specific, as is everything within care, but you can make a real hash of it if that part of the assessment isn't done effectively.
Okay. What about supportive measures, extra additional supportive aids to help the person, the individual? Let's say someone's living on their own and they haven't got a wife, a partner, however, living with them to support them. What additional things might be necessary?
Well, you can get
maybe with more advanced dementia, shall we say, rather than somebody who just needs an evening call.
Well, with advanced dementia, really you do need support package in there, because mm-hmm. somebody, if we're talking about care within the home, because that person is likely not going to be capable of meeting their daily needs effectively. So you need someone to prompt that. If we're talking like absent person, you want somebody, or you feel the person's at the stage where they should, could manage without a physical presence going into the property. You've got things like the big communication clocks. So there's the day, the time, the date in big letters. They actually, you can program them to prompt, now it's time to take your medication. Remember it's Thursday, whatever these other things are. There are things like the canary system. So that literally is like some weird version of Big Brother. So it's not like a camera in the corner of the room, but it's like it works on sensor, so you can see which room the person's in. And as I say, when doors, windows have been opened. So if the door's open at 5 a.m. in the morning, why would it open at 5 a.m. and it hasn't closed again? You can assume the person's left the property, etc., etc. So there are little bits that can be done, but because it's so, because you require that detail to get these things right, really it does need physical presence to make sure these
physical
things are done
present. Assessments, ongoing assessments, and really it's where you're responsive on your CQC inspection comes in, because often it's like, well, this property, we need the gas turning off. That's not a decision you make unless there's been an incident in the first place.
Yeah, so it needs doing, etc., etc. So
you often you are playing catch up.
Yeah, and this, it's not a process that can be cheated.
Yeah, but that will feed into someone's argument as well. I want to maybe a care home would be more suitable because it's safer, because if you didn't catch the incident and they just disappeared and wandered off and no one was there, or
it's the silver scales, isn't it? Because they can tip within your favour or out of it depending on your perspective and depending on what you load them with. So it does come down again to that detail specifically to that person. But there's lots of arguments, and sort of are socially and scientifically backed with what's really key for people with dementia or Alzheimer's care is the environment they're receiving that care. So there's a lot to be said for their own home environment is by far going to be the most appropriate, because it's familiar, it's comforting, it's going to prompt certain memories and general kick in. So the smell of your own kitchen, you will recognise, you know, your things like that. And that step, you will always step over that step because you always have done for 20 years. Whereas into a new environment, a bedroom in a care home is going to be very unfamiliar. And back to that vulnerability, which we discussed briefly at the beginning, again, you move somebody vulnerable into an environment they don't know, they're going to feel additionally vulnerable, and they're going to potentially respond additionally more excitably, should we say, because that sort of fight response is going to kick in, not through selective process of the individual, because where am I, what's going on, why am I here, who's that next door, why is this woman working towards me in this burgundy tunic, etc., etc.
Unless you happen to have a carer who looks like someone they had a real problem with.
Which has happened, which has happened, and
that's
same,
the woman who cheated with my husband.
Yeah, which has also happened in the experience of our company. Amusing, not amusing, but you do get the same response within the home for the same reason. So again, Shirley coming in her burgundy tunic into somebody else's living room, you likely would get that same fight response, like, what the hell are you doing in my living room? Get out, because again, the person in that environment, it's their environment, and it isn't normally somebody wandering in and out of it. So it does depend, but in my experience, people seem to be more tolerant in their own home. They also have more control. So if they do want to decline something, then they can decline it. It's which of course they can in a care home. I don't mean they can't, but they feel more confident. They can sort of promote their own independence a little bit more, and then in theory you can support it a bit better. Now that is fantastic while ever that person is managing relatively well enough. There will always be a point where, well, hang on, we either have to go in here and ensure this gets done because this person isn't eating, for example, or if that's at that point, it might be we can no longer help this person, we've reached their ceiling and their preferred environment, and they are going to have to move into a care facility, which is obviously that's what we do, doing community-based care. But I think we do that particularly well. We're good advocates, and we assess as we go on. We obviously listen to staff, and we're very, very, very responsive. So to date, we haven't got that wrong. We've managed to support people right up to the point where we've recognised, well, now we could do a different...
Time to move on.
Yeah, basically. But before that happens, obviously, there's other support we can get in place. So we have the dementia teams that come in and help us on community as well. They also help us assess, well, hang on, is this a blip? Is this just a nudge up the progression and it will settle again? Is there an organic cause that's chipping into this and making it worse? Or are we at that point where this needs to tip? And so there's other professionals that can help in that situation. And a good agency would always consult somebody.
Tap into those other professionals. Absolutely. Rather than flying solo.
Yeah, goodness me, yeah. Because everybody has a speciality. So we access those people for a reason. And obviously, you've got, that's perfectly client-centred care. There's no ego. Well, we know and we think. It's like, we need to check and we need to get someone else to give us their...
If you are a carer going into someone's home who has dementia, what do you need to be considerate of, and what do you need to consider rather than just your standard care visit?
Surrender hands, which doesn't necessarily mean literally with your hands up, open palms, but approach as if that's how you're having to approach somebody. So I don't mean leave your own personality at the door, but there needs to be a different layer of consideration. Again, there's lots of studies, and again, it's backed by personal, professional experience, that you can almost always predict when you know your clients, which clients with dementia are going to decline or respond less favourably to which carers. And that's not because there's anything wrong with your carer. It's because their personality is loud. The person is a strong presence. They're sort of commanding, they're over-friendly. Anything that's a bit sort of larger than life is often not very well received, because, again, it goes straight back into that vulnerability box. It's like, you're louder than me, you're bigger than me, why are you moving fast? Why are you smiling so loud? Why are you laughing so loud? And it all becomes too overwhelming, so...
Percy don't smile so big.
Percy don't smile so big. But that can put people off, you know? So it's always calm, slow... Hence the surrender hands, and we do things steadily. Like I'm here to make breakfast, and we evidence what we're doing and involve people in that way, rather than bish and bash and bosh. It's got to be steady and slow. And even if you get to know that client really well and they get to know you, my advice would always be always enter the same way, because again, dementia is so unpredictable that you might have been fine for the 3 days, or the 3 days you've been working this week, and the fourth day you come in, good morning, and that's all it takes, and the person is straight back off in the box of vulnerability, and you know, you've lost whatever potential you've got to get done that day. So it is really, really difficult though, and it's really difficult for carers everywhere, and for family members and partners, because of the unpredictability. But there are certain things you can do to arm yourself well, and also know when you're beat. So if you're not getting anywhere, and if the person is adamant they don't want any breakfast, just leave it, and they're becoming really evidently wound up or agitated, then just leave it. It's not the end of the world, right? We can leave without making toast and jam. Revisit it though within the time there is the time. Try again in a minute. Don't push points, never argue. Yeah, that's fine. It's your decision, whatever. No problem. We'll do something else. Let's just have a cup of tea then. Have a cup of tea, and then 5 minutes later, when there's been a minute of conversation, go back and just pop the toaster on, present the toast. You know, there's ways.
So that's the point of what push point is. Do you kind of, if you know that person's wrong about something, or let's say they're talking to you as if you're Shirley from next door, but they lived next to Shirley 20 years ago and they moved houses 3 times since. So do you say, no, I'm a carer, you've got dementia? Or do you go along with, oh, yeah, no, I'm sure. I mean, obviously, if you're a big hairy bloke called Dave, that doesn't really work, does it?
Yeah, but there might be some obvious tells. But, well, there's different approaches, but collusion is one care technique, which is highly promoted in our company, which basically is step into their reality. Bearing in mind, it's a safe reality. So if you're going into gym and he doesn't need breakfast because Marjorie always does him breakfast. She's just not back from work yet. Okay, well, that's no problem. We can wait for Audrey. That's not an issue. I'll get these pots done, though. She'd be grateful for that, wouldn't she? There's no harm in sort of going along with it if it's going to keep him calm. He then will likely, you might be able to then make the toast because you're not talking about it anymore, so you can just present it. If you walk in and say, well, Marjorie's dead, isn't she? And she died 6 years ago, so that's just ridiculous. All you're going to do is, one, slam the person into their vulnerability box, but two, if that's not present in their mind, you're just going to be serving them with news that their wife of 40, 50, 60 years is dead. That's not going to go well. So we're not there to sort of force this person to remember everything, correct them about everything, make them feel stupid, etc., etc. What's the bloody point? You're there to meet their daily needs. So food, personal care, potentially medication, some companionship. It doesn't have to be right, and I'm doing the right in the speech marks, because obviously that would be the carer's perspective. It's whatever's right for the client. Obviously, we don't go along with it if, you know, he thinks Marjorie's back in a minute, so we never need to go to the shops ever again because she'll be back with the shopping. Oh, yeah, no problem, bye.
And we'll leave. Cruise them off out to work.
Well, no, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's got to be sensibility, but that comes within your dementia training as you qualify as a carer, so people are aware of how to handle those situations. And any situation that's becoming progressively worse, if you're going in every morning to gym and he refuses breakfast and you can't get around him for breakfast, and he does that every single day, then we know we have an issue because that collusion isn't working. So sometimes reality is necessary, reminding Jim that unfortunately he lives alone now. That can sometimes be useful, but again, it's picking your timing, and it has to be damn necessary to put somebody through that process again. And they're going to potentially forget within the next 30 minutes, 3 hours anyway, and you're back to square one at lunchtime. So it's like, really, what damage does that cause? What upset does it create? And what does it actually achieve? And the majority of the time, it's just going to cause the upset, and it's not going to achieve anything. It's not going to make him go, oh, okay, then you can make me some toast when you've just told him his wife's dead. Probably not going to be in the mood for his toast. So it is really, really, really bloody difficult, though.
Yeah. But to summarise, we've got an umbrella of dementia and Alzheimer's, which covers quite a few different conditions.
Yeah.
Which have different progressions and different causes. Providing that support is given in the right way from the right agency, you're going to have probably quite a long period of time, really, from what you potentially were expecting at the beginning of maybe hearing a diagnosis, or as most people already currently think, you're quite a long period of time where from the right agency, support can be given at home until the point where it drops off a cliff.
Yeah, yeah.
And so before we go on to kind of the pros and cons of care at home and care homes, just to quickly touch on funding, is that even though NHS continuing healthcare funding should cover lifelong illnesses and things like that, dementia doesn't come under that. It comes under full social care funding, yeah, and social service funding. And it is means tested. So if you have savings of over £23,000, whatever it is, you will be contributing something. So anything between £23,000 and £50,000, and anything over £50,000, you'll be paying for the full lot at home, whether that is a one morning call or a morning in a bed call, something like that.
Yeah.
So you are going to have to go through an assessment. In terms of the finances as well, it's damn hard to get a power of attorney in place once a diagnosis of dementia is given. I think I'm right in saying that. Because you are in it to best interest and mental capacity.
But you've got power of attorney for health or finance, and the two cross over depending on prognosis and whatever. There needs to be an entire separate episode about power of attorney because it's complex. But no, not necessarily. Power of attorneys are actually very easy to be able to put in place. Very, very easy. They're not always taken for gospel, though, because it comes down to best interest and capacity and things like that. So they're great to have in principle, and they're really good to have there to sort of try and advocate, whatever that is, would be it the health or the finance. But they're not always upheld, depending on where that care or that finance advice support is leaning towards. That can easily be undone. But the most valuable thing about having, even in the first instance of care home, is where you're thinking or wanting to go, having a home care agency first really does support not just the client, but also anybody else within that situation, like the relative or a partner, because they're there to assess as well. And not just assess professionally, monitor and market differently on a day-to-day basis. Like an agency can see a decline so much clearer than somebody either living with the person could, or somebody dropping in and out, because you're there to do many more functional things with that person. Your perspective is different. And then you've got that added bonus that they can tap into the GP and other supports on your behalf, mm-hmm. on the client's behalf. And it makes everything that bit heavier, which really helps, because the biggest issue, as we said at the beginning, is the time when it comes to assessment times with dementias. And most are written off as assumed dementia. The diagnosis doesn't even happen.
And because of the memory side of it, there will always be medication, but an agency isn't given any money. Well, for a start, there's no extra additional funding given to the care agency for dealing with dementia, despite the fact that it's
complex. It's
multiple
complex
times
needs.
More complex. Yeah. And no funding is ever given for medication, whether that's ordering or administering or assisting with.
No.
So again, that's not dealt with from social services.
And it's always needed with people with dementia if they're on medication. Yeah.
So taking that into account, expect to pay. If you've got dementia, depending on what savings, or your relative with dementia, depending on where your savings level at, it is means tested. You will be going through also, as well as your dementia assessments, you will be going through financial assessments. And if you're going to go into a care home, they will strip your assets, strip your house,
yeah,
to fund that care if you haven't got the cash.
Yeah, your house will be sold to pay for your care home space.
So on to that then. I think I know the answer to this already. What is the best setting for dealing with dementia?
In my opinion, which could vary to a million people, definitely at home.
Well, there are 900, apparently, if it was the biggest, 900,000 people living with dementia in the country.
Oh, that's sad. That's really sad. But if, again, it depends if you've got the access to the support, but if the support is there every day of the week at home, for the things that I said briefly at the beginning, you know, they're in their own environment, they can promote their own independence, they feel generally safer, etc., etc. You can actually manage a home environment really effectively if you're responsive as an agency and you've got people that work with you. So let's say the situation's fortunate enough that there's another relative involved, and you touch on the gas cooker thing. I mean, how many times has that happened with us? Literally countless times. Yeah. Where the grill's been left on, or the hob's been left on, or something, and the
putting
first
paper
thing,
on a gas fire.
Yes, because memory shoots back to the fire. You put things on the fire, so people put things on their fire, regardless of how the fire is actually fueled. All these different things, but you can control those very quietly, but instantly, effectively with that support. So it would be a phone call saying, "We need the gas disconnecting. We need to get a combi microwave, we need to get a microwave, we need to do this, we need to do whatever."
The dog needs to be removed.
Sadly, the dog needs to be removed, or whatever it might be. And that sounds really bad, because you chuck pets in there. Anyone listening to this is going to think, "Oh, sounds awful to mention."
Very specific.
That's a specific scenario, which is that was a different kettle of fish. But it's making sure the environment remains safe, and the person therefore can remain safe within it. Mm-hmm. So, but it is easy to do. And you can adapt. And with the right support, the client doesn't necessarily notice that that has been lost, as it were. So to you and I, or anybody listening to this who's fairly fit and well, the idea of going from home-cooked meals to microwave meals would feel immensely different. Would you agree? If you couldn't have a home-cooked meal?
Everything
had to be in a microwave.
Yes. Yeah. No, I would. I was thinking the cooked meals, which are very good, but...
No, generally, talking like...
Wiltshire Farm.
Yeah, I was trying to avoid saying the brand, but yeah.
Bugger that.
More common ready meals that are aimed at the elderly, should we say, aren't particularly...
Marks and Spencers, surely. Marks and Spencers is aimed at the
elderly. Marks and Spencers aren't that bad. They're all right. They're up there. But generally, if you're going to hear, well, one of the adaptations we need to make is we no longer... can allow the person to have a home-cooked meal or even like a boiled egg or something. It's everything in a microwave. Mm. Some people are like, oh my goodness, that's just not worth it. Get them in a care home immediately. The other side of that is care home food isn't always home-cooked. A lot of it could be microwave-based. It could be the same stuff. It could be lesser quality stuff. It could also be better. So my point is not everything is as severe And as awful as it may sound, and it gives that person that however many months or years longer to be at home. Same thing with pet care. Every, bar that one instance, every other time we've actually encouraged and supported pet care to continue.
Because it is companionship, well known to be a great
routine. Yeah, and it just helps enormously. Obviously, that situation that was experienced at our company was really, really bloody dangerous. And we would never advocate a client would keep a pet that was literally dragging them around a village on an icy pavement, whether they had dementia or not. You know, that was just an unfortunate match when the family replaced that pet. But we can actually make things very, very appealing, but keep it safe and keep it responsive if there's those opportunities there to do that. If you get full-blown resistance, whether that be from the family or the client themselves, obviously that comes down to best interest. GPs and another may support us to make a change. Usually the fire services, particularly in our county, are incredibly responsive and will just come in and they basically say, well, no, fuck that. We'll come and we'll disconnect this and this. We'll put this and this in, because they know it is not worth it to, you know, professionally to have that risk. So there are some really, really good links out there.
And driving licenses stay in place for a very long time. They don't get taken for it.
They give me the wobbles, they do, that's just lethal. But that's a separate issue. Generally, the other support you can bring in, is my point, within an assessment or at any process of somebody living at home, if you're a responsive agency and you're aware of what you can access, then it's just so straightforward. But that's where it comes down to making sure your agency's
Could you use the driving licence as like a litmus test in terms of what point? Because I think you'll agree there that at some point a care home setting is the only setting.
I would say probably 7.5 times out of 10, that's inevitably what will end up happening at the end of that process. Mm.
So what, maybe the driving license is like, if the GP takes your driving license, you're on the real slippery slope.
Yeah.
Because they do leave them in place.
They leave them in place far too long. Far, far too long.
But you can at least live at home until that driving license goes and then start thinking.
Yeah, but that's a separate debate altogether, because even when they take the driving license away from you, that doesn't stop you. You don't have to have your driving license displayed on your car window as you drive around. People drive around anyway.
There's been quite a few times when the license is gone, but the person's still going to, because no one's bothered to take the keys or the car.
Anything, police don't stop every single car that's in transit on a daily basis.
And that's certainly not the agency's fault, because you can't, it's illegal. It's legally not allowed to. You could move things to make it harder to find,
but you can't remove somebody's car
or car keys.
No, that would be theft. There's layers and layers and layers of complexities, but you can, and I'm probably making it sound more complicated than it needs to, but it's actually very, very easy to do care at home well with somebody with dementia or Alzheimer's. It also depends on the impact that's having on other people. I will add that in there. You know, if a partner's really struggling because of it, then it might be, well, this person could continue for 3 years at home, but his wife isn't going to manage this level of pressure or they can't have the grandchildren around anymore, and that's just heartbreaking. There may well be some other point which just turns it on its head, and the person themselves could be perfectly well for eons, but it's like, no, that's not going to be appropriate. So then it gets shifted. So there are obviously, hence where it comes down to the detail and therefore the person. It's got to work for everybody, because that would only end up negatively affecting the person anyway. So
at what point do you think a person should go into a care home?
If their general needs cannot be met with support and encouragement from a community care agency. So if you're getting daily resistance for, I'm not even going to say medication, because most people who are elderly can manage without most of their medications anyway, or that's always what's determined. That's one of the first things that go. GPs are like, oh, just don't bother. If they're being difficult about the meds, just don't bother. Let's see how they get on. If we get really adverse effects, we'll put them back on them. I've never known a GP put meds back in place once they've removed them. And people have gone on for years without these medications that they supposedly needed to survive. So medications, we'll say 8 times out of 10, are irrelevant or can easily become irrelevant.
A cynical person will be that the pharmaceutical companies need them to survive.
I agree. We're talking about the person we're referring to. But yes, it's mainly when meals, food, drink, is consistently declined or not accessed by the person, that's just a very unpleasant way to end your life, because you're convinced you've eaten when you haven't.
Because kind of food and fluid intake is a big one with dementia generally anyway, yeah. Because you've got times of not really understanding times of day.
No.
Alcohol intake at like alcohol intake. 8 a.m. in the morning.
Social prompts, you normally eat with your husband. The lady's been widowed for 7 years.
Yeah.
But she doesn't eat until the husband comes home. Ergo, huge issue. Convinced they've already eaten. There's all sorts of things that go on. Change of taste, like the family might still buy their favourite things because the family are lovely and they think, well, mum loves strawberry trifle. Mm. Yeah, until a year ago, she can't abide it. You know, there's lots of different things that get in the way of that. But again, some very careful and interested agency can easily unpick that and turn those things around. It's if you get to a point where those things are no longer unpickable or turnaroundable.
So when basic needs can't be met, so you got the food, they're refusing anything, I suppose refusing any food from the care team, refusing any personal care from the care team.
Yeah, personal care is important.
In danger,
it's not important from a vanity point of view. It often is to relatives, and I'm going to put that out there because sometimes it's not worth upsetting somebody over because they're not, you know, as pristine as he or she once was. But they have to be healthy. Skin has to be healthy. Areas which could cause increased infection need to be kept clean. Mouths need to be clean and moist. You know, there's some things that we can't avoid. Appropriately dressed. You've got to have people wearing winter clothes in winter, summer clothes in summer, things like that. So anything that could actually make the person unwell.
What's the one with, there's somebody with dementia and a catheter, which was just a
disaster.
The GP's bright spark of an idea.
Absolute disaster. No idea what that tube is sticking out there. Somebody get it out quick. It was just horrendous. On a daily.
I don't need this.
Oh my gosh, no. But again, that's another thing. Although a care home would struggle just as much with that. Because bless them, the person's still going to think, get this out of me now, sort of thing. But it's when things can't be gotten around. And you can, as a relative or an individual experiencing dementia, expect your agency, if you're receiving home care, to be patient and to put a lot of effort and time into working out the best things to do about those situations. If you're getting resistance or impatience, my advice would be to swap agency. Because, yeah, it might take a bit longer to work out what's going to make this better, but then it makes everyone's life so much easier once you've worked out what it is. So your agency should be invested in that because it benefits them as well.
Yeah.
If you've got somebody who's not interested, move on. But if there are things which really aren't getting anywhere, then it's probably time for a care home. You might have a situation where you've got so many restrictions with the client because now Jim won't accept male carers because something from his past when he was in his teenage years means he doesn't want men in his house, whatever, when, however, wherever that comes from. And the company employs 50% male and female staff. The company might not be able to actually facilitate the care package because they can't just send women, or you know, there's lots of things that can get in the way, but there's also lots and lots of things that can be explored. But my advice would be to try home care first, definitely. If it becomes too difficult for anybody, then by all means, a care home, but one that specializes in dementia care, not just a general nursing home. You know, the areas need to be specific. That's the other bonus of having somebody at home. They're sort of looked after completely as they are themselves. They're not sort of being rushed or quietened or put in a different area so they don't disturb other people. They're sort of, they remain that whole person, where obviously in a mixed facility, somebody presenting with dementia can cause disruption, can cause upset elsewhere, and that can affect the care they receive as well. Not through lack of care, we can't have Jim next to Mary because she's terrified and she won't eat now and she won't go to sleep and no one can actually, everyone's got to watch what Jim's doing and no one can look at anybody else, and it becomes a real palaver. So it does need to be somewhere specific that caters for.
So if you're looking, if you're now at that stage where you're looking for a home, try as hard as you can to get a dementia specific home.
Yeah, definitely.
What else should you be looking for? What else, though it's not your area of expertise, to care homes, What else goes on in a really good dementia-specific care home?
All the things that you expect on community. really. So there'd be a really effective, timely assessment. There'd be specifics to that person that ensured were met. There'd be the activities they like doing. Let's say they had a piano at home, and that's something you can encourage them to do to calm them down. You would expect them in some way to facilitate that in the care home. I don't mean they have to go and buy a grand piano, but they could get a keyboard, or they could certainly facilitate the family to provide something to keep in the person's room. It's again all about the detail and the specifics to that person. If you're approaching a care home and that's your example, well, actually dad really needs a piano or something he can just tinker with, it really helps calm him down. And you get the, well, we don't have musical instruments here, our policy is that we've got, just don't bother, move on. Because again, the person should be bigger than some restriction. And as I say, I'm not talking about moving in a bandstand. You can have one of those teeny tiny keyboards you can get for kids from Argos. It'd do. Just something for someone to be able to interact in those ways. Basically, can their preferences be met? Ask them what their assessment processes are like. Do they provide care in ones or twos? That's another thing with dementia care. So again, back to that vulnerability box. If you've got to wash somebody, and if you can, if the behaviours aren't, you know, unnecessarily challenging, it would be a one-to-one wash. I would go in and wash somebody on my own. I wouldn't take two people in if this person can mobilise. Care homes often go around in twos, and if, again, you're going into this person's room, which is already new to them, and there's two of you, right, come on, time for a wash, you're straight back into that vulnerable box and that fight of not having four hands on me. Where you're coming from, you know, again, it's all about the approach and what's going to suit and what's going to suit people. And often dementia units really put off families, even when they're putting a family member in there who's also got dementia, who's going to contribute to the unit in the same way, because it can look really, really terrifying, because you get all those personalities and those challenges and those everything's all in the one place, and they can look messy. But that's how they're going to look. You know, people aren't going to be put in neat boxes, and you kind of want it to look like that to an extent. You know what I mean? You can't control or stop dementia, so it's going to look colourful, is my point. So expect it, and that's not a bad thing.
Mm. And how much of your own personal effects could you expect to kind of move in with the partner or relative?
Not many. I've only worked in one care home, and you basically get like a little cabinet and a little wardrobe, and you can put what you can fit in those. You normally put things on the walls and things like that. Possibly, if you're lucky and the person isn't sharing a room, you might be able to move in a specific chair or something like that. But otherwise, everything is whatever's within the care home. So any points of familiarity and comfort are, you can normally expect to not be able to transfer. So again, you have to be fairly confident that the care home is the right move, because you're likely going to be picking up this person and taking them almost completely out of their environment. They're into a clinical-ish room, maybe with some, you know, sage green paint on the walls, but still it looks and smells clinical. You're going to have a clinical chair. So you might have an armchair, but it will be obviously clinically backed, so it can be cleaned and it's protected and all that stuff. The bed is likely going to be a hospital bed, for obvious reasons. Everyone's got the same thing. So everyone's got the same cupboards, everyone's got the same wardrobes, everyone's doors look the same, the curtains are the same. It's quite tricky to make them incredibly personalised, should we say. Yeah. By all means, you can take some things in, but imagine moving into a hotel room, a small hotel room, which has already got all the furniture. That's what you're looking at. So it's tricky. And most don't accept pets. And as you know, working with me, that's one big thing I think should always be promoted, because it makes a huge difference for companionship and routine and everything else, and purpose. That's normally a no-go. You do get care homes that have their own pets, which is lovely, but it's not just quite the same as having your one companion. So it's just, I don't know, my opinion is you have to be fairly brave or fairly desperate in way of need to go into a care home anyway, you know, so...
Especially now. No visitors.
No.
Everyone else is on 5-day isolation periods.
And the terrifying thing about that is places normally, historically, where you couldn't visit, or there's big restrictions would give you a reason for concern. Why don't you want us to see? So the fact that
we're all more.
But the fact now it's that's going to be encouraged governmentally or whatever, whoever you want to blame, that in itself is an immense worry. It would be to me if I was putting a relative into somewhere. I just wouldn't be comfortable. Again, you go back to the childcare scenario. Would you send your child to a nursery which you weren't allowed to see or meet the staff or go and ever see them within that environment? Of course you bloody wouldn't. Why is your elderly relative any different? And often they are treated differently and they really shouldn't be. They should be treated with an approach with as much caution and panic as you would as a parent of an infant child, being less than me, because they are just as bloody vulnerable and susceptible to all the problems teeny tiny kiddies can experience and have to suffer in those environments. Adults are exactly the same, especially when they're compromised.
In a way, you could say it's not worse, but you roughly know also their wants, their needs, mm-hmm. their worries, their favourite things, what they like. Whereas with a child, you're kind of, they're learning that as they go along. So you don't quite know how they're going to react. Whereas you do know often, whether it's your dad or your partner or anything else, how they're going to respond or mm-hmm. react and what they like.
Yeah.
So,
in my opinion, it's always met with far too much, lack of emotion, should we say. Lack of consideration, empathy. That's what's missing from the government as well, just to add in there.
Because obviously there'll be lots of very good homes doing a very good job.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it is a difficult, it's a last chance,
and it's all about that person. So it's not a criticism to any care home, it's just you've got to be prepared.
There are plenty of shit domiciliary agencies.
Oh, gotcha. Fucking thousands. But you've got to be prepared for that environment you're moving anybody into. You're taking them out of what's theirs, you move them into something else, and you can't see them or support them in there. Would you do that to your two-year-old? No, it's highly likely going to be everybody's answer who's ever had a two-year-old.
I've got some questions here. So this is in an article in the Tory Graph, the Telegraph to you. Mm-hmm. So it says, tips if you're considering residential care, and this is specifically
residential
dementia.
Nursing.
Residential. Says residential.
Okay.
But it's also specifically an article about dementia. Mm-hmm. So it says, ensure you're involved with the initial assessment, whether it's for in-home or residential care. So mm-hmm. this is obviously from the perspective of, you know, if you're a relative or a partner, make sure you're involved with the initial assessment.
Absolutely.
So there's an expert saying, I would always ask family to attend just so I can make sure the information that I'm being given is correct.
Yeah, because again, you want those wants and dislikes and likes. It might be, well, Dad used to love strawberry yogurt, but now he hates everything that's not chocolate, for example.
But also check it. Yeah. Although the relatives may skew you a little bit.
Yeah, possibly, but it does help, and it usually is more useful than it's not, and it makes the relative feel involved as well. Yeah.
Keep in touch and make regular contact with your relative's carers. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't just speak to management. The mood of the staff will be a huge giveaway as to how caring that company is.
Yeah, and how the carers are treated often affects how they then treat their clients.
Ask about training. The skill mix that a home has within its staff is important. Mm-hmm. Do spot checks. You should never be concerned if a relative tells me that this is from another professional saying that they're never concerned if a relative tells me that there'll be cameras in the home or on the front door. I'm assuming that's in a care at home setting.
Yeah, yeah, like a domiciliary agency. Well, no, I mean, I suppose not, but then it's not very... You can understand why they do it, but it's got to be consideration to the carers too. It's all about trust, isn't it? And it has to work both ways. You know, so a carer, they automatically feel like they're not trusted. Why aren't I trusted here? What's the... You know what I mean? Mm. Again, it puts the carer in the vulnerability box. And what you're trying to avoid with good care is people should all feel confident and safe. Nobody should feel vulnerable on either side of that provision. That causes detriment. Makes people respond differently with a different instinct rather than what they're actually there to do. So caution with everything and consideration for everything, empathy for everything. Mm-hmm. But you said there was a question. What's the question?
I can't remember. I thought they were questions, but they're not questions.
So. Oh, right. Yeah, I mean, that's good advice. It is good advice. But again, just when you were saying the spot check thing, it actually gives me goosebumps. It's like, why would I have to spot check? That's just, ugh. But yeah. Suppose you have to. In some instances, actually, the thing, there is no option. So if there is no option, then it doesn't mean you're submitting someone to hell, but you've got to be really bloody careful. As you well
does it mean there's only one home to choose from?
Or if all of a sudden you haven't got a choice of being at home, that person has to go in a care home, even you feel or they feel they're not ready. Sometimes the cookie crumbles the way we don't want it to crumble, and so those things have to be accepted and just gotten on with. And that doesn't mean that moving somebody into a care home is a worse thing to do. But again, it all comes down to consideration. And I know one wonderful, precious gift we all have in life, which nobody, well, I'm not saying nobody, it's a really unfair thing to say, most people don't consider enough, is that time is the most precious thing we've got. So if you can take your time to get that person in the right place, it is so much better than rushing and just putting somebody in the first place you get to, because it's like buying a house, it's like finding a nursery, it's like picking a holiday. You know, I mean, holidays, sometimes the last minute ones are the best, but you know what I mean. It needs thought and it needs consideration and empathy. If it was you, what would you want? There's not enough empathy, and there should be. There should be empathy in everything that we all do.
Do you think a family could manage full stop, start to finish?
With what?
With somebody, with a relative with dementia.
Providing all the care?
With help, but yes, mainly.
In what environment? In their own home, yeah. Or in you moving the relative into your own home?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Like an old, like very, very old school, possibly. Well, I was thinking of the Spanish, I don't know.
The issue you've still got there is you're moving that person out of their environment, so you're causing the same confusion level as you were moving them into a care home. There's obviously other familiar prompts because you've got all the family members there, but still that's going to throw things off. But you can't argue with history. It's people in cultures where they have their elderly, unwell, cognitively impaired relatives living with them, living to their 90s, into their 100s, and so on and so forth, and sort of do so fairly accident and trauma-free. So there's an awful lot of history to back up that's
essential. You don't die of dementia, you die with dementia.
Yeah, you die with dementia. But, you know, there's the answer. But I just don't think people want to.
Life is difficult to manage that these days.
Yeah, it is. And again,
it's a lot of pressure.
If there's kiddies in the house, or there's teenagers, and there's partners of teenagers, and there's this and there's that, and there's a normal working life, and there's two dogs and a cat and three guinea pigs, and then a relative with fairly advanced dementia living, you know, now in the spare living, dining room, come bedroom, it's awkward, but it's definitely doable. And as we say, it's inarguable that lots of cultures manage very, very well and have fairly successful situations doing so. But I don't, probably really the wrong thing to say, but I don't think us as Brits are really geared up for that. Our perspective is too selfish. And sort of rushed as well, you know. We all want to get everything done and everything should be as it should be, and we all want to compete with Dave at work, and we all need this and that, and you can't do that with, you know, Granny stuck in the shed in the garden, which was supposed to have a hot tub and a Peloton bike in it. You know, it's all, well, what do you want from life and what are you willing to sort of... But, no, again, our experience is again, weighted in the fact that there probably isn't enough family input.
Yes.
Well, there isn't.
Yeah.
You know, that's... Well...
The state will step in.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, this isn't my problem now. It's like, well... No, but they could have said that about you at any other time as well, you know. And it's sort of... It's circular. And now that our culture in this country has dropped that one on its arse, really. And it could be better. It could be a lot better. So... Mm.
Well, that wraps up episode 3, and I think we'll touch on dementia again at some point, as we mentioned, but other than that, hope you join us again for episode 4, and I absolutely have no idea what that's going to be about, but it'll be very interesting and informative and enlightening and all of those things. But for now, take care.